and this is the coming of Jesus. I mean, it is the Bible story, right? I mean, that is the point of creation, all in redemption, and Jesus becomes the climax of the story, and yet he will come again, which fills out the end of the story. So if you want to understand the Bible, you have to understand Advent, and he shows that the whole Bible is looking up to this great Advent season and then seeing the nativity through the eyes of this broad trajectory of the whole Bible story.
Welcome to this episode of the Upwards Podcast, where we explore the intersection of Christian faith in the academy, church, and marketplace. In today's episode, we're joined by Byron Borger, beloved bookstore owner of Hearts and Minds Bookstore, for a rich and heartfelt conversation about Advent. We explore the spiritual rhythms of waiting and longing, and Byron shares a curated list of resources that span the entire Advent season. So whether you're looking for devotionals, theological reflections, or family-friendly reads, this episode is a treasure trove of inspiration for entering Advent with intention and hope. So grab a warm drink, settle in, and join us as we journey through the season of holy waiting.
Today, it's my pleasure to be with my dear friend, bookstore owner and manager Byron Borger. His bookstore is named Hearts and Minds Books. And as always, I encourage you to check out their website and reach out to them if you have any special book questions. Byron is a great thinker and also a great reader. And it is an honor always to pick your brain, Byron. So what we'll be doing today is talking about Advent. And I'm trying to remember, is this our third Advent resource podcast?
I think it's our second. We did one last year that went on and on as I talked about lots of Advent books, but I think that was the first one we did Advent that I recall.
Do you think it feels like the third because you went on and on last year?
Probably. Yeah. Yep. I gave enough for 3 years last year. And I will again today. If people are listening, I'd love to talk about books.
Well, and I see you have this huge stack behind you, but I wanted to just briefly do what kind of a little quick walk down memory lane with you. I want you to remember being a child before Christmas and just pick a memory from that bank of yours. And that is something so precious to you that always comes to mind when you think about Christmas.
Well, I don't know. That's a fascinating question. A lovely question. Thank you, Susan. As I get older, I have fewer memories of my past. It's kind of weird. But one of the things my family always did, we lived in southern York County, almost to the Maryland line in southern York County, which is in south central Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. And we would always, after opening a couple of gifts and stuff, get in the car and go to my grandmother's house that lived about 4 hours away in those days, 3 or 4 hours away, north of Harrisburg, in outside the town of State College. If you know in higher education, you know Penn State, mm-hmm. Yeah. Just up above Penn State in Center County. And so we would always make this drive over the river and through the woods, as they used to say, at a grandmother's house we go. And I would see both sets of grandparents, my mother's parents, and then in another little town, even further up into the woods, would be my father's parents. They were both rural folks in very small towns, hunters and fishermen. Would often be out fly fishing, even in the middle of winter. And so we would go and have holidays there. And then other cousins of mine would show up too. So it was a nice, not a giant thing, but I had 5 or 6 cousins that would always be there and their parents. And that's probably my fondest memory over the years, because it was sort of a ritual where we would always go and spend a couple of days at my grandparents, both my mother's side and my father's side. Yeah. And then different sets of cousins in the midst of those two different visits. And so that was always a holiday thing. My birthday is a couple of days after Christmas. And so that was always, when I was little, we would sort of complain about it because we were always celebrating Jesus's birthday and I kind of got left out of it. But as I grow older, it's actually a neat thing to kind of have this holiday of my birthday right in between Christmas and New Year. So that's sort of fun.
Well, I was thinking about this on my side, you know, and I grew up in Texas near Dallas. And it's interesting that you picked a memory that is so similar to mine, which is going to see my great aunt at her big rambling ranch style house. And there would be like maybe 25 relatives, great aunts, great uncles.
Wow.
Amazing food, like this great Southern cooking laid out in these big buffet tables. And going home then on the 30-minute drive back to Dallas, which isn't 4 hours, but 30 minutes or so, we would always listen to the broadcast from NORAD, the Space Center in Colorado Springs, where they were tracking Santa across the night sky.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, and I'd be looking up at the stars at night in Texas, but it was that journey, that sense of journey, that time with people that I really loved with really good food that always really was my most precious memory of Christmas. Not the gifts, not, although I was spoiled rotten, but it was that fellowship, if you will, and that tradition. And so in a way, I find it fascinating that both you and I picked out something so similar.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's something you can't buy.
Was your family religious? Were they deeply spiritual about the Christmas season?
We were, but they wouldn't call themselves religious. I think we did have traditions, though, that brought to mind what this season is about, which is the birth of Christ. But yeah. I don't think I had as well formed an idea of what Advent was. And I think it is through talking to you and reading some of the books that you've brought to my attention that has actually helped form me and speak to something in my soul about what I'm really hungry for spiritually. And that sense of there's more to all of what we're experiencing of what we call Christmas than meets the eye and that we normally really reflect on. So I want to ask you now, what ways do you prepare yourself to enter into the Advent season?
Well, as you might expect, as a retailer, as things get busier near the holidays, I am always sort of distracted because my work, I guess pastors sort of feel this way maybe a bit, but my work is just twice as hard during the holidays. And I feel a certain pressure to do my Book Notes newsletter every week where people are asking about Advent books and children's books. And I want to do other new books that are coming out near the end of the year and the best of lists. So it's a busy time. And I feel like I'm always writing and thinking of what I can sell to people, what's going to be useful for people. You know, they call Black Friday for a reason, because it's when the businesses, often independent businesses, begin to turn a profit at the end of the year because you haven't really made enough all year to get into the black.
Oh.
So the holiday season is important for those of us in retail. And I find that to be not something that's really as troubling as it used to be for me. I live into that busyness because that too is a religious way to serve God and people as we're running our retail business. Every moment is holy. Every act can be sanctified. And so as we lay our bodies down in Romans 12, 1 and 2 fashion, you know, serving God with all we've got in our bodies, that becomes worship. So I find the busyness of retail and mailing out books and so forth to be sort of a special thing that becomes important to me. I know we're sending out books that are Christmas gifts.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I write little notes in. I often pray for the people. I shouldn't say that publicly, but you know, we sort of enjoy doing that and serving people and hoping to heck that they get there in time. That's always an issue too. People call it, I need this tomorrow. We're sending the books to some special person and we have to get them there quick. So it becomes a kind of frantic time, but it becomes sort of a holy time for me. So the holiness of ordinary life takes on a fresh expression during the holiday season. And then the other thing that, again, you would expect is I do read. I love reading books about Advent. I love Advent devotionals. We're going to talk. I got 10 of them here. I'd love to talk about these things because there's something special about Advent reading, just like during Lent. It's a time that sort of soothes us to get into this waiting, not just the countdown to how many business days there are until Christmas, how many shopping days, but rather this waiting for Christ to return, this longing. You said, Susan, what you hunger for. That's a beautiful phrase for Advent.
Yeah.
What do we want? What do we hunger for? What do we thirst for? What do we desire? And we desire ultimately Jesus. And he has been born in the past, but he's born anew in our lives, and he will come back someday. And that's sort of the Advent picture, not just the countdown of how many shopping days we got, but this, how many seasons do we have to cry out, oh, Maranatha, you know, come, Lord Jesus, how long, oh, Lord? And so that getting out of exile, which is a theme in the biblical lectionary calendar during the church year, of the Jews in exile in Babylon, waiting to get back to the restored Jerusalem so that they can fix it up again and build the city that's been destroyed, this longing to go home to a home that isn't even fully there yet. That's Advent for me. And so I love reading about that during the time of Advent.
Yeah. And what I've appreciated about the recommendations you make for books is that you pick out books that cover a spectrum of the meaning of Advent. And you mentioned darkness. You mentioned, you know, this holy waiting that is really kind of sums up what Advent is. But some of the authors that you've chosen in the past and that I imagine we might touch on again, one of them I will mention is Kelly Nicodea, who wrote The First Advent in Palestine. And what she talks about in her book is some of the history, obviously, of that first appearance of Jesus, but also brings together both what she calls the grit and the glory of Christmas, of Advent, and that we live in a troubled world, that we live in a world that is restless, yearning, and violent. And so some of what the Advent story brings to us is in the midst of a restless, difficult, violent time, that is when Christ appears. And that is something that I think is so worth delving into and giving ourselves the opportunity to kind of consider what it means to know that our Savior, our love, and the God of love came to us at a time which even then was a very difficult, painful, violent time. So here we are, and I would love to hear what you have to recommend, you know, from the grit to the glory.
Well, I'll tell you what, may I start with one that is not an Advent book, but something you said just resonated with me so much. And Kelly's book, which I referred to last year, that first Advent in Palestine, it's in paperback now. What a great read that is. And so thank you for mentioning that one.
Yeah.
A book that is coming in January. However, I've been told by the publisher that we will have it early. So we will actually have it in the mid to end of December, is a forthcoming book that has been long in coming. And it's a friend of yours at the Study Center. I know Study Center people know Steve Garber. And Garber wrote this book, Visions of Vocation, years ago, Common Grace for the Common Good. And there was a chapter in there in which he coined this phrase sort of proximate, like approximate. He said, we need to live proximately, which is to say, we don't get everything in this fallen world. We can have substantial healing, as Francis Schaeffer said. It can be substantial, but it's not everything. And so you can't live with an ideology of a utopian sort of worldview where you think you can build God's heaven on earth. It just isn't going to happen. So how do you stay at faith for the long haul is that you become to make peace with the proximate, that we take steps towards faithfulness, we honor God where we can, we love our neighbors the best we can, but at the end of the day, we let the results in God's hands. We're not changing the world in some ultimate big sense. Well, that chapter was probably the most discussed chapter in Visions of Vocation, and he was encouraged to write a whole book on that chapter. So this collection of essays on this notion of living proximate is coming out in mid-December, end of December, from Paraclete Press. It's a lovely little hardback. It is called Hints of Hope. Hints of Hope. That's what we get. And in a certain sense, that's an Advent theme. I almost thought Steve ought to get it out if the publisher could, like in time for Advent, this notion of a hope that we get a hint of. We get a glimmer of the kingdom of God coming on earth as it is in heaven at Christmas when Jesus is born and it begins to be announced and it begins to be developed through his miracles and signs and his wonders and his mystical parables. And then through the death and resurrection and ascension, the whole story is a hint of hope. And so Steve's book, it's just a beautiful, beautiful resource. I've read it a couple of times in manuscript form. It's going to come out in a lovely little hardback, serious collections of essays on this notion of being proximate called Hints of Hope. So I hope people pre-order it. We have it at 20% off already. And if anybody wants us, we can send them out as soon as they arrive. So that's one thing I'm excited about. Even though it's not technically an Advent book, it would certainly capture this already, but not yet sort of feeling that makes us painfully aware that God's kingdom has not come. and that there is horrible things going on in the world and in our lives. We were just talking about my wife having cancer and the struggles with health in your own family, Susan. And so we know we need a lot of hope. And sometimes all we get is a hint. But can that be enough? With the glory of God at stake, yes, indeed, the hints of hope are enough. So I'm a big fan of this forthcoming book from Steve, and I wanted to commend that right from start. If we talk about Advent books as such, I did mention these last year, but for people that didn't listen in last year, can I highlight a couple that I just think are essential? The first most essential book is one of my almost all-time favorite books, and it's called Advent, The Once and Future Coming of Jesus Christ by the great Fleming Rutledge. And as you probably know, and as many of us have come to appreciate, she's a deep, deep thinker, an Episcopalian priest and preacher who's known for her eloquent sermons. And there's 5 or 6 books of her collections of sermons on Old Testament texts. One is on disbelief called Help My Unbelief. She has one called The Gospel in the New York Times. This is a collection of her Advent sermons. It's almost a year's worth of preaching from this eloquent New York preacher, now in her 80s, Fleming Rutledge, a good friend, The Once and Future Coming of Jesus Christ. She explains what Advent is there, mm-hmm. and particularly the apocalyptic texts and the hope for the second coming of Christ, and framed that in a way that I never fully understood until I read that book. So that's one of my all-time favorite reads, and I dip into it every Advent season.
Actually, I am so glad you brought that up first, because that is a book that one of my colleagues reads every year. Yeah. And I find that fascinating because he is a huge reader, but he chooses to read her book every year. And I think it's a way of grounding himself. Like, this is what I believe. And then he probably gleans something new every time he reads it, right? Because I find that often with books that I've read before.
Oh, it's a gem. And there's more than a year's worth in there. So you can dip in 1 year and then finish the book the next year and then circle back. She has another one during Holy Week that is also one of my all-time favorite books. And I read that every Holy Week. I get out this Fleming Rutledge book. For those that don't want to wade in quite that deep, the notion of what Advent is, the season of waiting, the season of longing, the season of hoping that we get out of exile, this expectation that Christ will return and finish his good work, is best described in this little book called Advent by our good friend Tish Harrison Warren.
Yes.
This little book is part of a 5, 6, 7 book series. There's one coming out soon, so it'll become a 7 book series. It's currently a 6 book series of little small resources. This is not an Advent devotional as such that you read a little bit each day, but it's an overview of what the season of Advent is about. It's part of this series edited by Esau McCulley, and followed on the heels of that one is the time of Christmas, the 12 days of Christmas. What is Christmas season all about? This is by Emily Hunter McGowan, The Season of Light and Life. And then that's followed by Fleming Rutledge's most recent book. And I don't know if this is the last thing she's done, but it is the most recent thing she's done. And it's on Epiphany, when the wise men come, you know, and the light is done and the transfiguration happens. The season of glory, she calls it. And again, it's just a little short resource, but the biblical and theological basis of why people do what they do in the liturgical calendar around this season. A lot of us who are evangelicals or in non-liturgical churches were raised not to pay too much of attention. We heard of Advent, everybody's heard of Christmas, but we haven't really lived into these seasonally viewing time in the way that they invite us to in these books. So I want to highlight these. If you get nothing else this season, order these from Hearts and Minds. They are followed, by the way, with one on Lent and one on Pentecost. And one on Easter, of course. The one that is coming in January will be called Ordinary Time, which is the longest season of sort of the least spicy of the liturgical season. And yet that's going to be really good. I'm looking forward to that. So anyway, I am a big fan of those. And before we look at daily devotionals to read during Advent, I wanted to at least give you the big picture. And those books do that better than anything I know.
Right. And we've talked in the past, I think, that there has been a movement by many evangelicals to try to understand the way the liturgical calendar works, to understand the logic of it. And I find such books very helpful to me.
If we have time at the end, I'll tell you about two new books that are year-long readers around the theme of the church calendar. And so we'll get to those for January reading if we have time at the end. But yeah, you're right. More and more people are discovering that we think about time and the calendar in a uniquely Christian way that it orients our whole vision and imagination about how we live into time in light of the life of Jesus and the life of the church. So yeah, we'll get to those. But in terms of just books for Advent reading, there is just a plethora of stuff. I think one or two of these I've mentioned before, but most of them are brand new this year. So I'll just give a quick shout out. It's kind of an infomercial, I think, is what you're hoping for. So the first one is by Sylvie Van Hooser. It is called The Art of Living in Advent. I think, Susan, you would really like this.
I would love that.
It's 28 days of joyful waiting. And what's so nice about this, it is very much like her year-long one she did a year ago that was called The Art of Living in Season. And it, too, is oriented around the liturgical calendar. But what's interesting about this woman is she's such an eloquent writer. She's such a good artist that she very craftily and artfully describes creche sets that she grew up in her hometown, which was Provence, France. She was raised in France, and they have these famous creche sets that are huge, you know, with peasants and shepherd boys and drummer boys, you know, like all kind of townsfolk. They really do a big deal of these creche sets in France. And she grew up with all these characters kind of living into the season. And that earlier book goes through a whole year inspired by this creche set that she grew up using in her village.
Is it like a living kind of like?
No. They may do those, but these are just big characters, you know, just okay, kind of porcelain, I guess. Then they did this one. And what I actually thought when I first heard about this is they were going to take the Advent session of that book and put it out as a little reader. But no. This is all brand new stuff in the vein of that bigger one that was so well received. There's stuff about art, stuff about culture, stuff about the history of France, all around the birth of Jesus. It is wonderful. The woman carrying olives like is one. She has these little pictures. I don't know if those are watching can see it, but little drawings like you'd find almost in a cookbook or a horticultural book. She has little pictures of the guys that you find, the bakers carrying their daily stuff into the manger scene. So the artfulness of this, the illustrations, the prayers, it's a great little book. So I'm very, very big fan of that. Well, I'll jump back and tell you one that has been around before, but I don't know if I mentioned it last year. It's from this little publisher here in central Pennsylvania. Our friend Ned Bustard is the editor. You know Ned. Is the editor of Square Halo Books in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. And Square Halo is a discreet publisher that only does a certain number of titles a year. He has a couple of new ones just around the corner. But one that he did last year is called Advent is the Story. The subtitle is Seeing the Nativity Throughout Scripture.
Wow.
So what this does, it's a daily Advent reader. You read a little bit each day, a little prayer at the end of each reading, but it's essentially a Bible reflection on the whole Bible and how themes of the coming of Christ and the nativity of the incarnation is foreshadowed in the whole unfolding drama of the Bible. So it really is. It's by Daniel Spanger, who is a guy in Lancaster, a really, really sharp educator there. And this is the coming of Jesus. I mean, it is the Bible story, right? I mean, that is the point of creation, fall, and redemption, and Jesus becomes the climax of the story, and yet he will come again, which fills out the end of the story. So if you want to understand the Bible, you have to understand Advent, and he shows that the whole Bible is looking up to this great Advent season and then seeing the nativity through the eyes of this broad trajectory of the whole Bible story. So that's a great little read. It's not expensive. It's done by Square Halo. We have it here. We're real proud to tell you about it.
That's fantastic.
There's a guy I like, and he writes a lot. It's hard to keep up with him. His name is Tim Chester. Tim is a missional thinker and church planter, solid, solid guy in England. And he's written a number of books. He has a brand new one called With Heart and Soul and Voice. I love that title. It's Advent devotions on what he calls the first Christmas songs. Now, we all know Christmas carols, and what he means by this, and other authors have done this, as you might guess, is Mary's song, the Magnificat, And he looks at various aspects of that in the Gospel of Luke. He looks at Zechariah's song, the Benedictus. He looks at the angel's song, which is the Gloria. And he looks at Simeon's song, you know, the famous Nunc Dimittis. And so he has these four Latin phrases for these four glorious liturgical pieces that come out of four biblical songs that are rooted in the biblical narrative. So it's a Bible study on the songs of the Bible around these four particular carols that are sung, starting, of course, with Mary's Magnificat. So I love this. It's a not four part. There's four chapters, one for each week, but then there's a daily reading for each of those four songs, with heart and soul and voice.
Be perfect for somebody who loves the old music, the old choral music, right?
It is absolutely designed for those, or anybody that loves the scriptures and wants to realize, oh, these poems in the Bible were probably sung the Magnificat. Mary sang, you know, these are choral pieces. And guess who has a blurb in the back of it? Many people know Christine Getty, the great contemporary songwriter of Getty Music. She says, so much of the joy and courage we need each day is carried in these life-giving songs. So I like that even Christine Getty, a singer-songwriter, has a blurb in the back of that by Tim Chester. Hey, here's a book that I bet nobody knows about because it was a self-published project done for donors of a ministry out in the Pacific West Coast. And the author is an acquaintance of ours. In fact, Steve Garber has done some consulting with them. And I've come to appreciate the Murdoch Trust, it's called, and the Murdoch Trust funds Common Grace Ministries, not even Christian ones necessarily, but things that are helping museums and all kinds of social service projects. What they decided to do is they asked each of their partners who they've funded for these Common Grace, good, holistic ministry programs in the Pacific Northwest mostly, ask them each to write a devotion for the season of Advent. And so everyone is written by a different person that the Murdoch Fund has partnered with. It is spectacular. Catholics, Protestants, evangelicals, Orthodox Christians, a whole variety of people weighing in. Most of them are people we don't know, but they describe what they're doing. And you're so inspired to learn about these homeless shelters and these art museums and these after-school programs for kids and these campus ministry organizations, all kind of really cool stuff going on out there that they've funded. A few of the people are actually names that have written books. Walter Wright, W-R-I-G-H-T, teaches at Regent and has written some really good books on leadership. Christine Sine, a famous liturgical writer, her husband is Tom Sine, has a chapter in here. So there are a few people you might recognize. Steve Moore, M-O-O-R-E, is one of the main editors of this, and Steve helped put some of this together. A few of the other names are not famous, but man, their ministries are significant. And there's full-color, classy artwork. Classic Renaissance paintings and stuff. It's on glossy paper. There's nice, handsome design. There's full color, couple of ink colors in the text. It's discreet and pretty, and a prayer at the end of each chapter. Just a great, Jim Schmutzer, who's a friend of ours, has a chapter in here. So we're excited about this. It is called A Book of Days, Christmas Reflections from the Northwest. And it may be from the Northwest, Pacific area, Oregon, Seattle, you know, but it is just a gem of a reader and reminds you of so many good projects that are happening. A lot of people make good philanthropic donations over the holidays, and it's just a reminder of some of the good work that's happening in the community. They don't actually write about those projects much, or maybe they do a little. It's an Advent devotional, but it is written by these key leaders and activists and public servants in the Pacific Northwest, put together by this great organization. We're proud to carry it. It's a great resource, and I like telling people about it. And we have a few left here at the store, so that's kind of neat. And I thought some of your listeners might care about that. Hey, can I tell you about another book that's really fun?
Yes.
And this is so fun. It is so good. And it's by a guy I adore. His name is Matt Michalatos. And I don't know if you follow him on Facebook. He's an author. He's written a novel. He's written some devotionals. He's collaborated with other people. He's written a great book on conflict resolution in light of the fruit of the Spirit that itself is brilliant. This is a book called Praying with Saint Nicholas. He wrote an earlier one back in the spring called Praying with St. Patrick. And it was all this Patrick legend and lore and true stuff about St. Patrick and a prayer about that for each day, or a reading and a prayer. This too, Praying with St. Nicholas. I am telling you what, this may be my favorite Advent book of the year. It is so good because Nicholas, third century bishop, you know, lived for second century, lived like in 312 in a seacoast. His stories of ministry and miracles and giving gifts and writing love letters to prisoners. I mean, all kind of stuff this guy did. He was an amazing Christian bishop. And of course, he went to the big conference out of which came the Nicene Creed. This is one, he was a good man and a gentleman and a good bishop. But there is this famous story that not all of your listeners will know. So I might as well tell you, it's a good chapter.
Yes, please do.
He got in a fist fight with a heretic during the forming of the Nicene Creed. They're okay. Literally arguing about the divinity of Christ, and he decks a guy. He punches him right in the face.
Goodness.
So not his best moment, not his best moment. But Nicholas was a passionate, theologically informed bishop. And there is a page of reading about the scriptures that Nicholas himself preached on, with excerpts of Nicholas's lines, his quotes. At one point, get this, Nicholas, who becomes Saint Nick, Saint Nicholas goes to Bethlehem on a pilgrimage to the place where Jesus was born. He did this in about 312. He was maybe there a year. We don't know all the details, but it's in his journals and in the biography about him that was written shortly thereafter. It describes this. And so some of the stuff that he wrote while he was in Bethlehem in like the 300s are in this book. It is a gem. Matt did great research on this. It's a great little devotional. It's kind of funny at times, but it because Matt's a funny writer. He's a vibrant writer. But it's actually deadly serious about what it means to have good doctrine and good care for the poor and good leadership in the church and what it means to pray our way into Bethlehem as Nicholas himself did. So anyway, love this little book, Praying with St. Nicholas, a Christmas devotional by Matt Michalatos. It's published by Tyndale, and it looks and feels very much like the one he did called Praying with St. Patrick, which itself was a great, great read as well. So in the springtime, you can match that up. Matt has done a graphic Bible, a graphic reader of the life of Jesus, which is also pretty cool. He's an amazing guy. He's writing on a screenplay for a movie he's trying to get into production. So I like this guy a lot, and you should support his book. It's a good one.
It sounds fantastic. What I'm thinking is how little we really know about St. Nicholas. You know, that is true. So it's very good to hear about that.
Well, there's actually some really good biographies of him, and there really is more known about him. In fact, we mentioned Ned Bustard. I'm not describing children's books here today, but you know, Ned has a children's book about St. Nicholas, the gift giver at Christmas, and that is based on some real facts. And he has a little bibliography at the end of that children's picture book that Ned so delightfully illustrated on his book on St. Nicholas. So there is a lot to know and a lot to be inspired by these early church fathers. And most of us, we think of old Saint Nick and up on the rooftop and reindeer and stuff. We don't really realize he was a third century bishop and a really important church father that helped craft the Nicene Creed. In fact, got in a fight about it. So
that's a great resource. Thank you.
You know, another little book that's this exact same shape and size, this little kind of case-bound hardback. They don't have dust jackets, but they're just nice and handy and kind of attractive. I like these little small-time reads. This is one by Rick Viados. And Rick Viados is a pastor at a multi-ethnic church in New York, came out of Queens. Just a really great leader. He's written three or four books about a kind of holistic formation, Christian formation for the body and soul, for loving our neighbors well, for standing for justice. He's a good writer of major works, and I appreciate him a lot. He just did this little devotional for Christmas. It's called Waiting for Jesus, an Advent Invitation to Prayer and Renewal. And so it's a little bit, as you would expect from an Advent devotional, about slowing down, about pondering the deepest truths. He gives you a little thing to reflect on, and he has a section to prepare as you enter this time of pondering, a little prayer for the presence of God. So there's a time to ponder and a prayer for presence. It's really kind of neat. He gives you a question to ask, a closing prayer. So it's really a guide to almost an experiential time of spirituality, if you will, of Lectio Divino, of praying, of thinking, of pondering, of using your imagination, of being a little reflective in your own life. So even though it's just like a short little reading each day, there's actually some real meat to this that's going to bring up from the depths some deeper stuff about your walk with Christ. I'm a real fan of this. He says Jesus is a bringer of joy. He also talks about lament. So he gets it that we live in a fallen world and we're called to find joy. The very stuff we started the hour with, Waiting for Jesus by Rick Viados. Again, it's one of my favorites this year, I think. It looks really, really good. So I'm very grateful to talk about that.
Does that book actually like track Advent itself, or could you use that book anytime?
Oh, it's very much about Advent. Yeah. It's looking... finding joy in singing through Advent. There's a section about joy. You know, people light the Advent candles, and they often light the Advent candles around the four themes of wait. Well, he doesn't exactly do the four classic ones, but he talks about waiting, peacemaking, rejoicing, and beholding. So he's using these four words that are kind of faith, hope, and love, you know, kind of the same themes of the and peace. But it's waiting, peacemaking, rejoicing, and beholding. So yeah, it's very Christmassy, very Advental.
Right. But it's also, all those words are action words, which I appreciate.
Oh, that's good. Yeah.
Yeah.
In a gentle kind of way, you know, to behold, you know, this isn't sort of necessarily getting out there and changing the world or doing big things or sharing the gospel. It's these Advent practices, these verbs. You're right, they're verbs. To be a peacemaker, but to start with Jesus. Yeah, good.
To explore the books mentioned in this episode, visit heartsandmindsbooks.com. We have a list of the books mentioned in this episode available as a link in the show notes.
Well, I'll tell you another book that is a new one this year that I have not spent much time with, but I also know it's got lots of exercises and practices and invitations. So it's kind of a hands-on, worky kind of project, and it is a hoot. I love this guy. Not everybody does, but I'm an advocate and an evangelist for this guy. His name is Leonard Sweet, and Leonard is one of the more funny, eloquent wordsmiths I know. He's witty, but he also is serious. He views himself primarily as a preacher, but and a Methodist theologian, but he views himself as a forecaster of trends. A symbolic semiotics, he would call it, the art of semiotics, of reading the future, understanding the times and knowing what we should do. Jesus told us that we should know the signs of the times. And so he's sort of a Tom sign, we mentioned a moment ago. Tom was sort of that way too, sort of offering these visions of what the trends are. Well, this Sweet is really adept at that. And he has an Advent devotional now called The Star Still Beckons. Mm. The Star Still Beckons, Gifts of Presence at Advent and Christmas. And so he's inviting us to follow the star and to let it shine into the world. He is deeply mystical on one hand, deeply practical on the other. He's deeply biblical for sure, but he offers this kind of kingdom vision of living it out 24/7 in the midst of the real world. So he sort of gets a whole lot of stuff right, I think. The understanding of culture, the understanding of scripture, the understanding of the inner journey, the need to live it out. I mean, he's a Wesleyan in that sense, you know, living wholly for God, for others. Every moment is a God moment, as Wesley put it. So he's a Wesleyan preacher that's kind of postmodern, and he's looking at the signs of the times, but he's always looking back to the biblical story and particularly to the Jesus story. And so he loves the Jesus story, and he says it's for hearts, homes, and holy wonder. I mentioned that he was witty. He also likes alliterations.
Yes.
Hearts, homes,
and holy wonder.
Yep. So we got a lot of chaos in this season, and we need to slow down a little in both our hearts and our homes. And we have to invite some holy wonder into the mix. So I'm a big fan of Leonard Sweet. I haven't read this one yet. It's brand new. He published it himself on what he calls the Salish Sea Press. He lives up in the Pacific Northwest near the old Salish Sea on Orcas Island in the state of Washington. And so he has his own little publishing house, and he just released this one, and we are glad to have it.
That's fantastic. So of the ones that you've mentioned so far, are any of those good for groups to read together? Would you?
Oh, I'm glad you asked that. That's a great question. I should have been intentional in thinking about that. Most of these are individual readers, come to think of it.
Uh-huh.
But I think if any is sort of a weekly format, it might be this Leonard Sweet one.
Oh, good.
He actually does lay it out in parts, and he has a leader's guide in the back. And so there is this sort of thing, and then stuff you do on Christmas Day. And I don't know if small groups get together on Christmas Day, but he has some intergenerational pieces too, to invite kids and adults and families to do stuff together. So he has some guides, what he calls them, interactives. That's a word he uses. These are interactives, which is to say little exercises to flesh out the principles he's teaching. So he has a study guide in the back and these interactives to do together, even intergenerationally. So it's a pretty unique resource in that regard, and I think it would be good for groups and not just individuals. Yeah, that's a very good question. We, last year, I think, did a blog post in our Book Notes newsletter that were books that were specifically for groups, you know, just like four or five chapters for small groups instead of a daily reading format. That's great. If you got a small group, send me an email and I'll answer you with some other ones about that, if that's something that any listeners would find interesting. Hey, can I shift gears just a little bit and tell you about something different? There's three or four or five books like this out there. And I mentioned one last year. I'm going to mention a brand new one this year that's in this same genre. And it is books about the joy of the Lord in the midst of Christmas, but recognizing that many of us are hurting, that many of us find it painful to live through the time. What's that stupid song? You know, it's the happiest time of the year and all that sort of stuff. Well, it just isn't for some people. And then when we sing joy to the world before Christmas, even in Advent, we shouldn't, but some people do. And so we're pushing the joy of the Lord even on people before it's time. We're supposed to be in lament and waiting and hoping, and we embody our hope by waiting. And then people get into Christmas gifts and early parties way too early. And so it sort of ruins even the Advent feeling of longing that we have for something big to happen later. And so I think churches need to be really careful about how they work their practices out. We have a big Christmas cantata in the middle of Advent. It just irritates me to know, and my church friends know that. So I can say it publicly, but it just ruins the waiting of Advent. Well, if you're hurting, and the waiting for hope that isn't here yet is meaningful to you, then too much cheery Christmas stuff too soon just makes it all the more worse. So we're hurting our brothers and sisters. The Bible calls us to weep with those that weep. Yes, we rejoice with those who rejoice, but we also have to be sensitive to those that are hurting during this time. So we have four or five books. They call them blue Christmas services that some people do. Christmas services, Advent services that are just a little more gentle, a little more reflective, not using the joy of the Lord text and the rejoicing stuff texts, but the longing and lament texts that are so important to the true spirit of Advent anyway. So in a certain sense, we all should be experiencing blue Christmas, sort of what it's about. But for those that maybe need that special thing, they've lost a loved one, and this is their first Christmas without their loved one, those kind of books are useful. The new one that just came out this year, it is called Unhappy Holidays. Unhappy Holidays, an Advent devotional, blessings for a blue Christmas. It's by Shara Lee Gerber, and it's published by Herald Press. Herald Press, I get every single one of the books that they do in our bookstore. They happen to be owned by the Mennonites, so it's an Anabaptist theme often, and she herself is a Mennonite leader, a young woman who has gone through some hard times and recognizes that we need Advent books that are particularly sensitive to those who find holidays difficult.
Yes.
I've named a few of these in our Book Notes newsletter. In our past Advent seasons, we always include any about Blue Christmas that we can find. And this is the brand new one this year. How can we hope when not all is merry and bright? It says on the back cover. And so this book, Unhappy Holidays, is a daily devotional for those who maybe are not feeling it and maybe have good reason not to because they're hurting. So yeah, this is a book that's really, really important, and it looks really, really useful for many of us.
I often wonder if we've kind of made Advent a lot more difficult for everybody by our continual focus on gift giving and all of the cultural kind of traps of Christmas, I think. And I know I've fallen into the habit of always thinking about it in terms of what I give people. And it's not fallen into it. I grew up with that, you know, that culture. So what we are talking about here is actually somewhat countercultural. this whole idea of waiting, a mourning, of acknowledging the season of just winter itself, the darkening of the world around us. All of that is part and parcel of our experience, and we're not supposed to be fake. And so what you presented there is very helpful. Thank you.
And we are embodied creatures. And so as people with limitations, we're made to be human. That's how we live into life, the changing of the seasons. It's all part of kind of the way our circadian rhythm works, and we shouldn't fight against that. Now, just to counter that, I'll say this. My friend Leonard Sweet, I mentioned his good book. He had a Facebook post just a couple of days ago saying, you know, he's seeing signs that people are starting Christmas even sooner. We've always complained that we put out the Christmas decorations too soon, and our store has always resisted doing that. But people are putting out their stuff even before Halloween now. And he says, isn't that interesting that there's something going on in the culture that's longing for the goodness that Christmas brings over and against perhaps the evil spirits of Halloween? And that maybe there's something going on that we in the church, with our fussy concerns about Advent — he pokes a little bit maybe at me — that our concerns about Advent, don't do it too soon, is maybe we're missing something that the culture itself is longing for. So he was saying, if you want to put out your Christmas decorations, don't let anybody shame you. Put up your tree, start singing those carols. Let's get on with it, because the culture is longing and hungering for some kind of good news that we can offer during this season. I don't want to go there yet. I want to still commit to Advent, and I think Fleming Rutledge is a good counterpoint to that. But I just wanted to invite people, if they want to go back and look at Leonard Sweet's Facebook post inviting us to an early holiday spirit, you know, it's another counter voice. It's counterculture in a different kind of way, because, again, he's just not talking about it as a consumer fest or going to the mall, but offering true good news as people have a heart to hunger for something that's joyful in their lives. People need that.
Yeah. I think that's exactly what you're doing and he's doing, is saying we are really longing for something true and real. And so often what we end up falling for is not. So, and actually, I'm really hoping that we get this podcast out soon enough that people have plenty of time to collect these books and you know, set themselves up for a good time getting ready for Advent and being in Advent.
I've told this question before, Susan. Maybe I even said it last year. I don't remember. But when we were little, when our children were little, our store was younger, we were so busy. We were open every night in those years, too, and didn't have employees. So Beth and I were working in the store every single night. Then you got homework and stuff. We never had a chance to do much Advent, even lighting the candles. Our son liked fire, so we would at least light a candle, but we could hardly do that. And then we didn't have time to shop for Christmas stuff because we're open on Saturdays, and you don't want to shop on Sunday. So we didn't even have Christmas presents. So we finally decided we were going to give our families Christmas gifts and give our kids their presents at Epiphany, which is when the wise men brought the presents to Jesus anyway. So we kind of linked it to that and said, this is going to be our family custom. And we thought, our kids are going to be so embarrassed by our countercultural ways. They're always embarrassed by us anyway. And so they dug it. They loved it. It's like almost like Hanukkah, where the kids get gifts every day. Like, they could wait and get more gifts at Advent. So their grandparents gave them presents at Christmas time. And we had plenty of gifts anyway. And then we could find out what they got and what they didn't get. And then we could go buy stuff at after Christmas sales and give them their gifts at Advent. So we started that custom when our kids were little, of sort of strengthening. We didn't even know what we were doing at the time. It was just practical. But we were actually making Advent, and allowing Christmas tide to be 12 whole days of feasting and celebration, culminating in a big party at Epiphany. We didn't even know it. My wife was raised Lutheran, so she had a clue. But we didn't exactly know what we're doing. And now Fleming Rutledge says that we should do that. And we're like, oh, yeah, we did that years ago.
We were a lot smarter than we thought we were.
Yeah. We fell into it through God's grace, and it was a real great thing to do as we moved the wise men closer to the manger in our little creche set and had some time to sort of stretch out the habits and practices of Christmas and enjoy 12 days of partying, for crying out loud. So I'm a big fan of the 12 days of Christmas, and let's let loose then for 12 days of parties, but let's not do it too soon, because we have to own and live into our human pain of hungering for righteousness and justice and peace to break out in the world. You know, something else we could do is we could do Bible study during this season. You mentioned small groups. There is a new Bible study that just came out, and it is 8 weeks. So you can't do one a week during Advent, but you could begin a little early and maybe end it through Epiphany. It's called Incarnation, and it's by Derek Vreeland, V-R-E-E-L-A-N. He's written a number of good books, Christocentric, informed by N.T. Wright, has a good vision of the kingdom. I mean, you would like Derek Vreeland if you know his kingdom stuff about following Jesus. And this is just an inductive Bible study. You read a little bit, there's a couple devotional kind of pieces, and then questions. And the first questions are even things of traditions that you celebrated as a child, like you opened with me, Susan, questions about Christmas and how we celebrate it and what is Advent. I think this could be done any time in the course of a year. It really is not necessarily a seasonal item. But boy, what a great time to study the incarnation as we move into the time of Christmas and then honor Christ our King and the Epiphany and the things that come right after the liturgical calendar in the time of Christmas to emphasize the incarnation. So this is a great, great study. And there's nothing like it in print that I know of, a good 8-week inductive Bible study for small groups or individuals to use together to study the incarnation of Christ. Not exactly Christmassy, But boy, it ultimately really is, isn't it? I mean, that's what it's all about. God comes near and moves into the neighborhood.
Is there like a denominational slant on that kind of book?
I think he's independent, to be honest. He is now actually on staff, I think, of the church that's run by Brian Zahn. And Brian, Z-A-H-N, Brian Zahn, it's the Word of Life Church in St. Joseph, Missouri.
Okay.
Might be kind of Pentecostal, although I don't think of Vreeland as being Pentecostal. But it is an independent church. As I say, he's been influenced by.
I was just wondering, you know, for our audience, if it has a lot of liturgical verbiage. So it's very accessible. So.
Yeah, it's just a New Testament Bible study on the notion of the incarnation, what it means that Jesus has come to earth. So it's truly a Bible study and doesn't use a lot of fancy lingo that I recall. I kind of glanced through it. I haven't actually used it in a group yet. It's brand new. So we're excited about that. Hey, can I tell you about some kids' books? Do we have time to talk just about a couple of children's books?
Absolutely. And I actually brought one of my favorite books, too. So,
oh, good. Tell me about it.
No, well, I got it from you. I bought it from you, and it's All Creation Waits.
And I was wondering. Good.
Yeah. Did you bring All Creation Waits?
I didn't, because I knew we talked about it last year.
Okay. Well, I just want to say that reading this book last year for me was so meaningful. And I invite you actually to talk about it again, because I think the combination of the art with the approach is really special. So would you like to speak a bit about this book?
Oh, I could speak about it. You can name the authors out loud since you have
absolutely.
Them right in front of you there.
All Creation Waits is the Advent Mystery of New Beginnings by Gail Boss, and it's illustrated by David G. Klein. And it is about her observations of the creation of the creatures that live in the wilderness around her home. And then there are these stunning, some of them are too hard to show up, but stunning black and white block prints of the creatures. And that's not a very easy one to see. But just trust me, there are prints in here that I actually want to own and put up on my walls if I could. Yep. But her
You're exactly right.
Yes.
Those black and white woodcuts or whatever they are, linographs, they are so, so good. I adore the artwork in that book. Gail Boss is at a farm in Grand Rapids, Michigan, around Grand Rapids. And these are animals that hibernate.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you think about Advent, the waiting for things to come, they're preparing for a season of darkness, literally. And so the themes that we've sort of talked about this, the sad Christmas or the darkness waiting for the light to come. That's exactly what hibernation is. And so these animals in God's creation almost are doing what we're trying to do ourselves. You know, we're a little slow to figure it out. They do it quite naturally. And so she draws these Christian biblical Advent themes out of these animals. So every day is a different animal. What a great, great idea. She did one for Lent on other animals. And again, the artwork is stunning with whales and stuff. And it's about endangered species and about the notion of death and extinction versus resurrection. That's a great, great, similar volume that's really gorgeous and really meaty and wonderfully done as well, her Lenten one. But her Advent one, and what's curious about it, you have the Gift hardback edition there in front of you, if anybody saw it as you held it up, red cover, ribbon marker.
Yeah,
there's also
stunning.
A paperback. It is so nice. The paperback's very, very nice, full of artwork, and people liked it so much that a year or two after it was out, then the publisher said, let's do a gift edition of this thing, and they did this nice red hardback, glossy paper. It's a lovely, lovely book, and I'm so glad you have it. Well, then on top of that, last year, they did a children's edition. And the children's edition does not have the same art. It has watercolors. So it's a little more child-friendly, a little more colorful, and the description is more brief. It's kind of natural history and science for kids about these animals, and a slight biblical Christian message about Advent in the midst of it, but it's sort of watered down, but a kid's version of this really profound adult book. And so there's the regular paperback, there's the hardback gift edition, and now there's the lovely hardback children's picture book version. So there's three versions of that book, and I'm glad you have it, Susan. It is a good one.
I think, yes. I'm not sure if you gifted it to me. I may have ordered the soft cover and you may have upgraded me just to be nice. But the truth is that I learned so much about these creatures and how they adapt to survive really harsh conditions. Hmm. And there's some sense of the miraculous, too, in some of the ways that happens. And in an interesting way, she gets at something that I often miss about how we are empowered even when we are maybe feeling a sense of being buried or being under weights that we can't manage on our own. And yet something is still happening in us that keeps us going and keeps the goodness happening inside of us. I'm not saying it very well, but I just felt really encouraged by this book.
Oh, you're saying it exactly right. This is a gospel-centered notion. What one author recently who wrote about the grace of the gospel, he called it the big relief. I mean, this is it. You can be buried underweight, underground, and yet something miraculous can happen where grace breaks through and
it's
all
totally
gone.
Is strength and weakness. And so I just wanted to bring that book forward because it was really meaningful to me.
And like with some of these animals, we might sleep right through it.
Oh, that's true. But there's definitely a benefit to that.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you about one that's very different. This one is not about animals. It is a classic, very vivid, very modern, artsy, very cool Advent book that goes along with a big children's Bible called The Biggest Story. The Biggest Story is written by Kevin DeYoung and illustrated by a really hip artist named Don Clark. And that Biggest Picture Devotional and then the Biggest Picture Story Bible became one of the more vivid and popular children's Bibles these days. One of the things I like about it is it makes a big deal about the Genesis 3 story when the snake has tempted Adam and Eve, and everything's come to wreck and ruin. And there's this glorious, almost Advent story where a promise is made that the snake will be crushed from the offspring of Eve, and that Eve's offspring will bear someone who is going to destroy the snake, even though it might kill him. It hurts his heel. And so, of course, the snake crusher is Jesus. And they carry that theme of the snake crusher throughout this Biggest Story children's Bible. Well, what they just did is they just released a big, fat, almost like a board book, Advent book for kids, inspired in part by the Biggest Story children's Bible. And so I'll hold it up here as people can see the numbers. Like there's the number one with all this graphic design around it. And they have each of the days numbered with really bright, interesting colors.
That's gorgeous.
And then a full page on a board book kind of feel, full color on the promised child and the Lion of Judah and a prophet that's going to come like Moses. Each of these days are lift the flap Advent calendars. So it not only gives you the big number, but you open the flap And so it's a big full page, lift the flap, larger than life, good, solid, meaty devotional, tons of color, tons
wow,
of cool graphics,
that's gorgeous.
Stars and lines and designs. It is not the kind of artwork that shows the pictures of the stories, but rather these kind of colorful graphic design pieces. This explains what Advent is in the whole flow of the Bible story, that a baby's going to come and he will be named Jesus and he will save his people from their sins. And he is the snake crusher that finally is going to bring healing to the whole creation. I think this big fat wonkin Advent picture book, lift the flap Advent calendar all in one, is a great, great read. Here's another book that's interactive just in the same kind of way. It's a big children's book, a little more conventional in the way it looks, an oversized children's book. And it's called The One We're Waiting For, an illustrated Advent devotional for families. So it's designed to use with children, and it is written by Taylor Combs, and it includes an ornament for each day of Advent, and then this kind of artwork that's inside the book. Really colorful, kind of modern, but more representation, artistic of the different Bible stories. And it is laid out in a really cool way, with lots of biblical stories that unfold the whole story towards the coming of the Nativity. So it starts in the Old Testament. It gives you all these ornaments. I don't know if people can see them here, but it's got these little round things that punch out, and you have all these ornaments
oh, wow.
that match the pictures of the book. So you got the pictures and then something from the picture in one of the ornaments. So you can even put those in a tree or an Advent calendar or something. It's the whole Bible, one big story of a coming king. And I just think they get it just about right. It's published by Brodmann Holman and includes these 25 ornaments you can cut out. It's kind of fun. It's kind of artful. It's a heavy hardback book, worth every penny to invest in that and use it as a family over the season of Advent.
Well, Byron, you know what? I just, every time I get together with you to talk about these things, I always come away not only refreshed, but encouraged, and also with gift ideas. So I think if you have sons and daughters and grandchildren who would be blessed by these types of books, I highly recommend that you look for them at Hearts and Minds. I also just want to thank you again, Byron, because you put so much thought into the offerings you bring us. And I always enjoy hearing your thoughts. It's very encouraging to me personally just to see you and your enthusiasm for the word and words. So blessings to you.
It's very kind of you to say that. Well, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. It is a real honor to be here. I know your ministry with students is really important. Your ministry with the greater community there, with faculty members in your college town. I really believe in what you're doing. And this podcast is just part and parcel of a bigger ministry you guys have there in a strategic place. So I'm really grateful for your work, for the Upwards podcast, for the Upper House ministry. You're doing great, great stuff. And if you want me back another time, we can even talk about the liturgical calendar more or other good resources to live into that throughout the year. I hope people read my Book Notes newsletter. It's one way we can stay in touch, even if you don't buy this stuff.
Yeah.
Just learn about the things that we're promoting and telling people about. You're not going to like every title I suggest, but you might like some of them. So I'm hoping over the course of a year, we can stay in touch.
Absolutely. And Book Notes is an amazing resource. So I enthusiastically endorse that idea. So thank you so much for being with us today. I really appreciate you.
Happy Advent to you all.
You too. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to the Upwards podcast. We hope this conversation has inspired you to embrace the Advent season with fresh eyes and a deeper sense of spiritual anticipation. You can purchase the books mentioned in this episode at heartsandmindsbooks.com. And don't forget to subscribe to Byron's Book Notes newsletter for ongoing recommendations throughout the year. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with a friend and leave us a review. You can find our library of previous episodes at slbf.org/studio. Until next time, may your Advent be filled with peace, reflection, and hints of hope.